World Cup Talk. Christina here with the storylines that matter most in football today. Germany just got the kind of World Cup news that can bend an entire knockout bracket. Nico Schlotterbeck has been ruled out with an ankle ligament injury, and even if you were never going to call him the face of the tournament, this is exactly the sort of loss that changes how a contender defends space, copes with pressure, and survives one bad night. Germany had depth, but Schlotterbeck gave them a particular mix of aggression and recovery that matters when the World Cup starts to speed up. What makes this story worth opening with is not only the injury itself. It is the reminder that the World Cup never stays on the pitch for long. One medical update can force a tactical rewrite, change the way fullbacks play, and make a title hopeful look a little less secure before the next ball is even kicked. And Germany are not alone in that mood. Canada are also dealing with real uncertainty, with Ismael Kone's fitness clouding a match that could carry them into the knockout rounds for the first time. Reuters framed that as a chance wrapped in anxiety, and that feels right. The tournament is full of these moments where ambition and fragility sit side by side. A country can feel one result away from history while also wondering whether one injury is about to shrink the midfield, limit transitions, and change the emotional tone of the entire game. For listeners, this is why injury news matters more at the World Cup than it does in the club season. There is no long runway. There is no luxury of saying, we'll manage this over the next month. The next match is the story. What I find especially interesting today is how these injury stories expose the difference between depth on paper and trust in real tournament minutes. Every national team has a list of options. Not every national team has replacements the coach actually wants to throw into the biggest game of the summer. Germany can say the right things about squad depth, and Canada can talk about collective responsibility, but listeners know how this works. Coaches get more conservative when certainty disappears. Midfields sit deeper. Center backs stop stepping in. Attacks lose that little bit of ambition. So when we talk about Schlotterbeck or Kone, we're really talking about whether their teams can still play like themselves under pressure. There was also a very different kind of World Cup stress playing out around MetLife Stadium, where local reporting focused on transit disruption and rush hour headaches tied to match traffic. That might sound like a side story if you only care about lineups and scorelines, but it absolutely is not. Host city logistics are part of the tournament experience now, and they shape how fans remember a World Cup almost as much as the football does. If getting to and from a match becomes an endurance test, that affects locals, traveling supporters, media operations, and eventually the reputation of the event itself. The modern World Cup sells itself as a month-long festival of access and spectacle. When transportation struggles become the headline, the gap between promise and reality gets very visible. This is also where the U.S. hosting conversation becomes more revealing. In one part of the country, New Jersey fans are dealing with transit pressure around a marquee venue. In another, Atlanta is being celebrated for drawing the biggest FIFA fan festival crowds of any U.S. host city. Put those stories together and you get a much more honest picture of the tournament than you do from glossy promos. Fans are showing up in huge numbers. The appetite is real. The atmosphere can be massive. But turnout creates its own test. Can cities move people well, price the experience sensibly, and make match day feel exciting instead of exhausting? That's a World Cup question, not a side note. I actually think the Atlanta story matters beyond crowd numbers. When organizers boast that one host city is attracting more fans than any other, they're not just celebrating civic pride. They're sending a message about what this tournament is becoming in the United States. For many supporters, the World Cup experience is no longer limited to the 90 minutes inside the stadium. It's fan festivals, watch parties, transit routes, security lines, food prices, and whether a city feels like it wants the tournament or is merely tolerating it. The places that create a sense of welcome are going to win politically, commercially, and emotionally long after the trophy is lifted. There is also a cultural angle today that I don't want to lose. The Guardian had a piece about Scottish fans bringing joy to the United States. And even though Scotland are not the center of the competitive conversation, that kind of reporting captures something essential. A World Cup cannot live on elite anxiety alone. It needs texture. It needs stories about how traveling support changes streets, bars, train stations, and public mood. When people talk about the magic of the tournament, they're often talking about exactly this: strangers turning a city into a temporary football neighborhood. That matters because FIFA can build infrastructure. But fans create atmosphere. Without them, the event is polished but emotionally flat. And yet, even here, there is a balancing act. Huge fan energy is wonderful until it collides with cost, congestion, and the little scams and frustrations that always appear around major events. One of the clearest trends around this World Cup is that the fan experience has become part logistics story, part tourism story, and part consumer story. Supporters are not just asking who should start at left back. They are asking what it costs to get to the stadium, how long it takes to leave, whether official events are worth it, and which city actually delivers value. That doesn't make the tournament less romantic. In a way, it makes it more real. Another thread worth noting is how official and semi-official tournament pages keep pushing squad explainers and tactical previews, like the new Portugal package from UEFA. On the surface, those pieces are straightforward service journalism. Here's the squad, here's the route, here's the history. But they also tell us something about where the audience is right now. This is a World Cup phase where fans are trying to locate certainty. They want context. They want to know which teams look stable, which coaches sound calm, and which rosters still feel intact. That's why every injury update lands harder, and every clean bill of health sounds like good news, even before a ball is kicked. England fit that pattern too. Reports around Thomas Tuchel insisting there are no new injury concerns before the Ghana match may not be as dramatic as Germany losing a defender, but in tournament terms, calm can be its own advantage. At this stage, a boring medical bulletin is actually a gift. If you can spend your final hours talking about shape, pressure, and finishing rather than swollen ankles and backup plans, you're ahead. The World Cup tends to reward teams that preserve optionality. Health gives you optionality. Panic takes it away. So if I had to sum up the day, I would say this. The tournament is being defined by strain in two forms. There's competitive strain, where injuries threaten to change what serious teams can be. And there's hosting strain, where fan demand is proving enormous, but infrastructure still has to earn trust in real time. Those two pressures are different, but they meet in the same place. The World Cup is unforgiving. It exposes weak points quickly, whether those weak points are in a backline, a midfield, a transit system, or an event plan. For me, the biggest thing to watch next is which teams can absorb disruption without losing their identity. Germany now have to prove they are more than one defender. Canada may have to prove they can chase history without a fully comfortable midfield. Host cities have to prove they can convert attention into a genuinely good experience rather than just big attendance numbers. And supporters, as always, will tell us the truth faster than the official messaging does. That's the conversation today on World Cup Talk. I'm Christina, and if the last 24 hours told us anything, it's that the World Cup is never only about the match. It's about bodies holding up, systems holding up, and whole cities being asked to carry the emotional weight of the biggest tournament in football. See you tomorrow.